This is Pacifica Radio's Letters in Politics. On today's show,
you have these dummy organizations run by Van Jones and others that on one side are trying to pull people's energies back into a dead electoral system and the politics of the Democratic Party. And on the other, you have an attempt to highlight the activities of people who are carrying out acts of vandalism and are confrontational with the police in a way to sever OWS from the mainstream.
Author and journalist Chris Hedges weighs into the debate over tactics used in the Occupy movement, and in particular, Occupy Oakland.
I mean, just to be clear about Black Bloc, that's being used as a synonym for militants, and the politics around the Black Blocs and anti-globalization movement are kind of being foisted upon Occupy Oakland. Occupy Oakland is a very different place, and in this article, there's a suggestion that Occupy Oakland is rife with Black Bloc activism. There's been exactly one Black Bloc at Occupy Oakland.
Christophe Lepore is an organizer within Occupy Oakland. We'll be in conversation with Chris Hedges next on Letters in Politics. But first, the news.
For Pacifica Radio, I'm Eileen Alfandari. House Speaker John Boehner says Congress will get involved if the Obama administration doesn't pull back a new requirement that all health insurance policies provide free contraceptive coverage, even policies provided by Catholic institutions. Sacramento area Republican Congressman Dan Lundgren echoed Boehner's opposition.
This is an issue that goes beyond the Catholic Church and Catholic institution. It goes to the essence of the First Amendment protections contained in the Constitution with respect to religious freedom.
Roman Catholic bishops have protested the insurance requirement as a violation of religious beliefs. The Catholic Church does not condone birth control of any kind. Health and Human Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius says the rule strikes an appropriate balance between respecting religious freedom and increasing access to important preventive services. NARAL Pro-Choice America said in a statement, 99% of women use birth control at some point in their lives. The statement added, requiring insurance plans to cover birth control at no cost to women is not just common sense, it's critical to protecting women's health. Dozens are reported dead in the central city of Homs on the fifth day of a Syrian assault. Activists reported children among the dead and said food and medicine are running short. Russia tried to broker talks between the Syrian vice president and the opposition. Russia's approach does not call for President Bashar al-Assad to step down, which is the opposition's chief demand. The Turkish foreign minister said today the international community must find a way to end the deadly Syrian assault on civilians. Officials in Somalia's capital say a car bomb attack killed 8 people and wounded 2 members of parliament. African Union troops largely have pushed fighters of the militant group Al-Shabaab out of Mogadishu, but Al-Shabaab has continued to carry out roadside and suicide bombings in the Somali capital. Rick Santorum swept the 3 Republican nominating contests yesterday in Colorado, Missouri, and Minnesota.
I don't stand here to claim to be the conservative alternative to Mitt Romney. I stand here to be the conservative alternative to Barack Obama.
Romney came in second in Colorado and Missouri. Ron Paul came in second in Minnesota. Still, Romney shrugged off his disappointing showing.
It was a good night for Rick Santorum. I want to congratulate Senator Santorum. Wish him the very best. We'll keep on campaigning down the road, but I expect to become our nominee with your help.
Mitt Romney, supporters of marriage equality, are celebrating yesterday's appeals court ruling that the Proposition 8 ban on same-sex marriage is unconstitutional. Such marriages remain on hold while Proposition 8 supporters prepare an appeal of the 2-1 ruling. Ted Olson, one of the lead attorneys who argued in favor of marriage rights, said the issue is important for everyone.
It is about us. It is about every one of us. And as the opposing witness said, in our case, at trial, we will be more American in this country when we eliminate discrimination based upon sexual orientation. Today, we are more American.
The federal appeals panel ruling decided the case narrowly with reference only to California. The decision said there was no legitimate purpose for taking away marriage rights, which gays and lesbians enjoyed for a period of several months, and that the Proposition 8 ban appeared to be based on moral disapproval. I'm Eileen Alfandary. Letters and Politics is next.
Good day and welcome to Letters and Politics for Wednesday, February 8th, 2012. I'm Mitch Jezerich. In recent weeks, a debate has been sparked over the tactics used by the Occupy movement and most noticeably Occupy Oakland. Generally speaking, one side of the debate says that frequent confrontations with the police undermines what the Occupy movement is about and shifts attention away from wealth inequality. Another point of view puts the blame on violent policing and that the police are the strong arm of a capitalist system. Admittingly, there are many nuances and views not in my general description. So bear with me on that. The debate has been amplified in recent days after Chris Hedges posted a new article at truthout.org called Cancer in Occupy. In it, he writes, quote, "The Black Bloc anarchists who have been active on the streets in Oakland and other cities are the cancer of the Occupy movement." Chris Hedges now joins me. He is a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, formerly with the New York Times, author of a number of books, including his latest, The World as It Is, Dispatches on the Myth of Human Progress. Chris Hedges, I thank you for your time.
Thank you.
And also joining me here in studio is Christoph Lepore, an active organizer with Occupy Oakland. He has been doing movement work for 12 years now in the anti-war, labor, anti-globalization, anti-police brutality, and Occupy movements. Christoph Lepore, I thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Chris, let me begin with you. You write, quote, "The corporate state understands and welcomes the language of force. It can use the Black Bloc's confrontational tactics and destruction of property to justify draconian forms of control and frighten the wider population from supporting the Occupy movement," unquote. Chris Hedges, what precisely are you referring to in this? Are you talking about such things as the port shutdowns, attempted building takeover, weekly marches concerning police? Or tell me precisely what you're talking about and then maybe expand on your idea.
Acts of vandalism and physical confrontation with police that is instituted or instigated by members of the crowd. I think that as repression mounts, and clearly what happened in Oakland was an example of a ratcheting up of police repression. You inevitably, and we've seen this, you know, I've seen this in movements that I've covered around the world, you inevitably will have counter responses that become harsher and harsher. But I think those responses, when they occur, have to be severed from OWS, because OWS is in essence a mainstream organization. It articulates the concerns and grievances and injustices that have been visited on a majority of Americans. It's why when you went down to Zuccotti Park on a weekend, you had, mothers and fathers from New Jersey with strollers and their kids. Before I let Christoph respond, I think the other important thing to remember is that there is now, both internally and externally, an extremely organized and concerted effort on the part of the security and surveillance state to destroy this movement. The first step, and it's good counterinsurgency tactics. I covered the war in Salvador for 5 years. You take your target and you deny them a base of operations, and then you create divisions within the movement. You have these dummy organizations run by Van Jones and others that on one side are trying to pull people's energies back into a dead electoral system and the politics of the Democratic Party. And on the other, you have an attempt to highlight the activities of people who are carrying out acts of vandalism and are confrontational with the police in a way to sever OWS from the mainstream.
Christoph, before I have you respond and get your take, let me just a lot of what Chris Hedges' article is about is he uses Black Bloc, and I don't know necessarily where to find the correct definition of what Black Bloc is, but I did go to Wikipedia, and this is what it says. A Black Bloc is a tactic for protests and marches whereby individuals wear black clothing, scarves, ski masks, motorcycle helmets with padding or other face-concealing items. The clothing is used to avoid being identified and to theoretically appear as one large mass promoting solidarity. The tactic was developed in the 1980s by autonomists protesting squatter evictions, nuclear power, and restrictions on abortion, among other things. Black blocs gained broader media attention outside Europe during the 1990 anti-WTO demonstrations when a black bloc damaged property of Gap, Starbucks, Old Navy, and other multinational retail locations in downtown Seattle. To be clear, Christoph, you don't identify with Black Bloc?
Yeah, I don't. I'm quite familiar with it. Again, my history in organizing, I've come across it a lot. I've been at demonstrations where there are Black Blocs. So, but I wouldn't identify myself as a Black Bloc anarchist. I wouldn't identify myself as a follower of Zerzan. I don't agree with most of what he writes, actually. And
what Zerzan writes, and that's somebody like Chris Hedges.
Well, right, that's one of the people that's quoted in the article. And actually, I think most people at Occupy Oakland don't even know who he is. I think there's probably a few of us that actually do who are around during the anti-globalization movement. But to suggest that he has any kind of ideological pull at Occupy Oakland is I think, preposterous.
I have heard, and I'm sure you have as well, a number of people, though, say that they are concerned by the tactics of Occupy Oakland and of alienating folks who may otherwise want to be involved. Your response to that, and also your response to what Chris Hedges has written.
This question of alienating people who want to be involved is very important. The question of strategy and tactics is extraordinarily important. But again, you're kind of hinting at it. We need to talk about definitions. We need to actually have facts that we're discussing. We need to be sure that we're actually discussing Occupy Oakland and not rehashing an ideological debate that's 20 years old and has absolutely no relevance to the current situation. So, I mean, just to be clear about Black Bloc, that's being used as a synonym for militants, and the politics around the Black Blocs and anti-globalization movement are kind of being foisted upon Occupy Oakland. Occupy Oakland is a very different place, and in this article, there's a suggestion that Occupy Oakland is rife with Black Bloc activism. There has been exactly one Black Bloc at Occupy Oakland. It was not organized out of Occupy Oakland. It was organized out of an autonomous march that happened during the general strike. That Black Bloc, contrary to what Mr. Hedges suggests, that Black Bloc did not attack police because there were no police around. It exclusively attacked property and dissipated. There was negative press around it, but nowhere near this amount of press, and of course there were no articles like this calling it a cancer on the movement. There was nothing that strident, and I think a lot of that was because the rest of the day was perceived as a huge success. Occupy Wall Street and Occupy Oakland are connected. We're actually pretty intimately connected, and we talk. And so, for example, you know, when Mr. Hedges was writing this article, he went to Occupy Wall Street and asked them for contacts with Occupy Oakland. I know this because I was one of the contacts that was given to him, and I was never interviewed for this article. And so, I have a problem talking about Black Bloc at Occupy Oakland on the basis of writing by John Zerzan from 1999 and comments of Derek Jensen. We're talking about people who are not involved in the Occupy movement. They're not involved directly at Occupy Wall Street. They're not involved at Occupy Oakland. And then specifically, no one from Occupy Oakland was, or even nobody from Oakland, was interviewed for this article or was featured in this article, in which we are supposed to be told that militants in, you know, Occupy Oakland are hypermasculine, in which we're told that militants in Occupy Oakland are seeking confrontations with police, are violent towards police, when the reality is that there's a lot of people in Occupy Oakland that are upset by this article because they're not being fairly represented. We have a group called Occupy Patriarchy, which was active on January 28th, working to defend that crowd against police violence. And, you know, their voices are being silenced. They feel excluded from this debate because, you know, and I shouldn't be the one here telling you this as a man, but, you know, where are the women and trans folk being interviewed to tell their own stories about hypermasculinity in the movement? There is hypermasculinity in the movement, but, you know, that doesn't necessarily identify one as a militant. There are plenty of women and trans folks that identify as militants and who want to defend people from the police. You know, likewise, you know, there's a comment in the article about African-American leadership in Oakland. Does African-American leadership in Oakland support, you know, there is no monolithic African-American leadership in Oakland. We have African-American leadership in Occupy Oakland, which could be made available for interview, you know. But again, they have to be approached, and when you don't approach them, then you end up representing them. And so again, there's nobody here in this article that there's no African American leaders interviewed for their opinion. Their opinion's represented as a monolithic anti-militant opinion. But, you know, come to Oakland and talk to people. We have a committee called Occupy the Hood. We have People of Color Caucus. And we have a Tactical Action Committee, which is primarily young African-American men. They're not given to wearing black. They tend to wear fatigues. And, you know, we have a different type of militants here. So, you know, if we the problem is we have to get past these kinds of assumptions, which are exactly the assumptions that the media uses to tar our movement. in order to begin discussing like the kind of real politics here. The militants in Oakland is not a militants of attacking the police. It's primarily a militants of defending against the police. And so if you want to talk about what happened on January 28th, and you look at it, there's a line of people with shields. Those shields have peace signs painted on them. They're wearing white shirts, blue shirts. They're old, young men, women, trans folk. There are people wearing, holding colorful flags. There's a man with an armchair. You know, these are people who are defending a crowd against police violence. And that's a very different thing. And Occupy Oakland makes a distinction in defending ourselves against police violence and attacking the police. And, you know, there's also a weekly march that's conducted by and primarily run by the Tactical Action Committee at Occupy Oakland. It's called the
FTP.
The FTP,
yeah,
right. Can't quite say what the F stands for, but the TP stands for the police. And every Saturday they go out with a set of tactical parameters. Again, they're very militant. They're very much against the police and the way the police function in society. They're not a black bloc in any sense of the word. And so you can't conflate all of these militant forces, label them as black bloc, and then begin to tar them with this brush and call them a cancer on the movement, because that's just not how things are on the ground.
Okay, Chris Hedges, your response.
Well, I wasn't writing about Occupy Oakland. I wasn't writing about Occupy New York. I was writing about Black Bloc. And I think as at the top of your show, you said in any organization, there are always nuances and contradictions and differences. I spent several hours listening to anarchist radio and reading anarchist websites to get a sense of what their responses were to the organized left. When I wrote the article, it wasn't about Occupy Oakland. I was very conscious of the fact that those I were writing about were a tiny minority that were not in any way representative of the mass of the movement. My feeling was that the existence of whatever you want to call them, but let's call them black bloc groups that engage in these kinds of tactics are counterproductive to OWS and play into the hands of the security and surveillance state, and that OWS has a role and has a voice that has resonated out across the country, and that they don't want to give that up, and they don't want to be used internally by nefarious forces to essentially be severed from that mainstream. So, the sort of dynamics of Occupy Oakland, and I from everything I've heard, I would agree with everything that Christoph just said. It was not part of the article. It was specifically targeted at Black Bloc. And when I was attempting in shorthand to explain the ideology of the movement to people who are probably not familiar with it, which is why I picked Zerzan. I mean, I could have picked someone else, I guess, but he's certainly one of the most prominent voices on, at least within the militant black bloc wing. I just wanted to give people an idea that, traditional black blocs are just against organization, and that they see groups on the organized left as counterproductive because in their view they're essentially reformist. That, and this gets in, and Christoph knows all this, but sort of arcane, the whole anti-civ debate and primitivism and all this kind of stuff. But I was going to call Christoph, and I thought, well, he's not black bloc, and in a way I think when you write, not only when you write a column, but when you write a book, you try to narrow your focus. And so I narrowed the focus around this, and that's why. So if I know that people interpreted it as an attack on the movement, I am so supportive of OWS, and remain deeply supportive. I think that there are highly organized efforts to destroy it, and I think the black bloc play a useful tool or within the hands of those who do not want to see this movement succeed, and that's why I wrote that story.
Christoph, in your response, and I posted Chris Hedges' article on my Facebook page, as well as a response to it, and I've gotten an enormous amount of people commenting on them, and both supportive and also upset with the piece. And I'm going to read a few from each side as we go through this conversation, but let me read one. One person wrote, "Occupy groups are doing good things around the country. Oakland is becoming a blight as they just keep pushing and shoving and shouting. Many Oakland occupiers have left. Because of this, the original reason has been left behind, and the focus is today on occupiers and cops."
Okay, well, so we're back on the Black Bloc thing. So I feel like I'm being forced to accept a fallacy in order to have a conversation about militants, which I do want to have. The Black Bloc is very easy to identify and to label and to define, because you kind of get to do that without anybody else on the other end. It's like talking about Anonymous. It's like talking about, you know, it's a boogeyman. It's a tactic, and it is not a set of politics, and it never has been. And so, I mean, I really do want to focus this discussion on the militants.
I want us to also be clear. So when you talk about militancy and Black Bloc, tell me how you differentiate between the two.
Well, I think Black Bloc, again, is a very specific tactic. And Chris is correct. It requires people to dress all in black to be indistinguishable or try to be indistinguishable. It is a group that are tactical, a manifestation that is confrontational towards police, is violent, and breaks windows. And that's breaks windows and commits vandalism. And believes that to be a political strategy, an insurrectionary political strategy. And militants is a belief in fighting back, a belief that the police are there to crush us, and a belief that people have the right to defend themselves against police, should stand up to the police, and also, you know, a belief that some form of direct action is merited in the social movements, and that we shouldn't shy away from the kinds of confrontational actions that will bring the wrath of the police state. And so, I think that there is a ton of militants in the Occupy movement, and in fact, the Occupy movement is becoming more militant, and that's why the media is pushing back against, you know, the Occupy Oakland, which is being turned into the representative of militants in the Occupy movement, and trying to kill its popularity.
And you're listening to Letters and Politics. I'm Mitch Cheserich. And I need just a moment of your time before we get back to this conversation with Chris Hedges and Christoph Lepore. We are in our winter 2012 fund drive, and I'm going to take just 1 minute here to appeal to you for your support. Now, I have a goal of $5,000 this hour. That's how much I have to raise each day to carry our weight around here to ensure the show keeps going. Yesterday, we came up $2,000 short. Now, I think today's conversation is important. So there's no DVD, there's no documentary, there's no book. There's a lot more of this conversation to come. And I'm asking you to pledge for the content and the idea of Pacifica Radio and KPFA in the Bay Area, KFCF in Fresno, and KPFK in Los Angeles. I'm asking you to pledge as generously as you can. Help me get to my goal. $25 pledge makes you a basic member, but if you could pledge $100 or $200, that will help pay for other folks who might not be able to pay and support this radio station like you can right now. The number is 1-800-439-5732. 1-800-439-5732. We're not preempting large portions of today's show with long pitches because we know the value of these airwaves during these times. I hope you will see the value in that. Not going to take 20 minutes to talk the show up because you know what we do here. And you know we do it without advertising or underwriting. You know we're listener supported. And you know that listener support means you calling the phone room right now. Number one last time. 1-800-439-5732. 1-800-439-5732. Now back to regular programming. Chris Hedges, I have personally covered Occupy Oakland actions, almost all of the major actions. And my experience is, and when we hear about and I'm not saying this is what you're saying, I know you're talking particularly about Black Bloc, but when we hear about Occupy Oakland being violent, my experience, what I have seen, is that Occupy Oakland is provocative, trying to take over an abandoned building. It's a provocative move. But the most violence that I have seen, a vast majority of it, and I haven't seen everything, the vast majority of it I have seen has come from the police. And I think that over time, when you have vandalism, spray painting, and broken windows, that has actually decreased. I was surprised how little of that was, say, on January 28th, when when Occupied Oakland tried to take over a building. What do you think about this distinction between militantism and Black Bloc?
I think that's a legitimate distinction. I wasn't writing about militants. I was writing about Black Bloc. I actually spent a lot of time quoting Derek Jensen, who I don't actually agree with on this issue, but Derek, you know, I think is a voice I respect. And Derek is supportive of militancy and an increased sort of confrontational militancy. I think, as you know, everything that Christoph just said is something that Derek would second. But Derek's struggle or sort of frustration with Black Bloc, as is mine, is that there's no thought behind it. It's non-strategic. In fact, it's actively opposed to strategy. That they don't think critically about how they act. They believe that that kind of a process immediately becomes hierarchical. As Derek says in the article, he doesn't have a problem with someone violating boundaries if the violation is the smart, appropriate thing to do, which is, I think, gets into the issue of militancy. What he has a problem with and what I have a problem with are people who violate boundaries just for the sake of violating boundaries. And as Derek again says, it's a lot easier to pick up a rock and throw it through a window than it is to organize. And I think what we're saying is organization is important. On a personal level, I don't think OWS should focus on the police. I think they need to keep their focus on Wall Street and the corporate state. I think confrontations with the police is not a tactic, but we're talking about tactics, not ideology, that in the long run is going to serve us. Having covered the revolutions in Eastern Europe, I watched how the foot soldiers of the security state essentially finally, because they centers of power were so corrupt and decadent, refused to carry out the demands of the security state to crush the protesters. That happened in East Germany, it happened in Czechoslovakia, and it happened in Romania, and it happened in Poland. So I think the tactic of reminding the police that they are not the 1% and not confronting the police is a one I embrace. But that's a discussion I'm willing to have. And I think that I quite consciously focused this on the Black Blocs. I did not write a column on militancy, which is much more nuanced and much more difficult because it is thought out. It is not random. It is not nihilistic, which I think Black Bloc is. This was an article about the Black Bloc.
Let me just get your reaction then to Chris Hedges. Chris Hedges, what do you think about the attempt on January 28th of Occupy Oakland to take over an abandoned building?
You're asking me?
Yeah, and the reason I'm asking you, because
I think that taking over abandoned buildings is an appropriate tactic. It's something that has been done in New York and done in Washington. I think that that is an effective tactic that I support. You know, it's something they've already done in Washington, trying to set up a kind of communal structure. And it obviously depends how you take it over and, whether that is done through acts of vandalism or without acts of vandalism, but taking over buildings, I fully support.
And finally, quickly, what would you then like to see done about Black Bloc?
Well,
tactics.
Think everybody's allowed to be in the movement, but I think that there have to be at least within OWS. They need to continue this very effective tactic of, one, not being confrontational with the police, not engaging in acts of vandalism or destruction of property, and of course, being nonviolent. That doesn't mean that, as the repression in Oakland was just staggering. And intentionally so. And they are getting frustrated. This movement isn't going away. They are going to get increased militancy with increased repression. That's exactly what happens. I mean, that's as old as humankind. And I think that there will be, you know, rather than talking about diversity of tactics, we should probably talk about diversity of groups. OWS plays the role of the civil rights movement in that it appeals to, you know, white middle-class couples in Hoboken. And you don't want to give that away. You know, radical groups throughout history fight on different fronts and through different forms. You know, Sinn Féin, along with the IRA. I mean, you know, we saw this in El Salvador. You had human rights groups that were very sympathetic to the rebel movement and yet espoused nonviolence. I mean, you know, there's room for many expressions, and it may be that the expression of militancy in Oakland is appropriate for Oakland. But I think OWS as a whole doesn't want to give up the fact that it resonates across the country, and if it embraces some of these tactics, especially the kind, if it continues to permit the kind of anarchic chaos and violence that is espoused by black groups, then they're going to be effectively isolated by the security and surveillance state and much more easily destroyed. And I think that a lot of this is, you know, I'm always going to be nonviolent. I mean, that's just, and I'm never going to resist arrest. And I mean, that's just the way I'm built. So, you know, those are sort of moral, that's another discussion. That's sort of a moral discussion. But I think really in the end, this is a tactic. It's a discussion of tactics. And again, we should not be naive. You know, we'll all find out 10 years from now, staggering amount of resources that the state has put in internally and externally to wipe these movements out. And I think the black bloc is a gift from heaven to those people who want to destroy, this movement.
Christoph Lepore.
I think it's obvious that the black bloc is not is completely anti-strategic, and the reason is that it's a tactic, and tactics are not strategic. I mean, strategic thinking requires thinking about what is an appropriate tactic at an appropriate time, which is why, again, you know, the Occupy movement has seen one black bloc materialize. I think the Occupy movement is thinking strategically. I'm not very concerned about the black bloc at all. I think it's made one appearance, and the one thing I would say, though, is that I don't think militance is going away. And, you know, I think that the Occupy movement's response to Oakland and response to what's going on here basically indicates that the movement itself is becoming more militant.
Do you think the militancy and black bloc are getting confused?
I do. And
in coverage and talking about Occupy Oakland?
Yeah, and I'd actually want to ask Chris himself, what, you know, 2 years ago he wrote a column. Of course, this is all over the responses to his story, but he wrote a column called The Greeks Get It. And this is a period of time in May in 2010 when the riots in the streets of Greece, they look like war to American activists, you know. And this is something that did inspire a lot of the militants and a lot of the radicals in Oakland, in the Bay Area, in the United States. And Chris wrote a column basically saying that the Greeks get it and they know what to do, and celebrating, you know, what was going on there. And so I'm curious why Chris is pushing back so hard against people that would like to see a similar level of militance in the United States. Regardless of whether it's strategic or not, to call their, you know, to suggest that their ideas are cancerous, is really to suggest that the situation in Greece is somehow fundamentally different than the situation here, and calls for different tactics and different militancy. And, you know, Chris himself has distinguished between, liberal activism, and I would say radical activism. And, you know, there is he read you a quote from him. In a traditional democracy, the liberal class functions as a safety valve. It makes piecemeal and incremental reform possible. It offers hope for change and proposes gradual steps toward greater equality. It endows the state and the mechanisms of power with virtue and serves as an attack dog that discredits radical social movements, making the liberal class a useful component within a power elite. And I'm wondering, you know, where are the criticisms coming from of the Occupy movement? To me, I see the criticism coming out of the liberal class, and it basically follows this quote to a T. This is what the media is trying to do. It's trying to say that Occupy needs to operate on this level of debate, of free speech, We need to sort of prostrate ourselves before the security apparatus of the state, allow ourselves to be beat up in order for our message to be heard. And when I go out into the street, I see exactly the opposite thing. We are not submitting to the violence, and when we don't submit to the violence, our message is getting out there. You know, you don't do anything for 2 months, and there are no news stories. No one's talking about Occupy. No one's talking about the message. And then there's a dramatic demonstration like this, and, you know, for whatever reason, the militants come out, as the militants always do, and there's a flurry of news, and now people are talking about how the Occupy movement is alive again, and the message is out there, you know, people are paying attention, and Occupy Oakland looks like it's growing again and getting more support.
And you're listening to Letters and Politics. I'm Mitch Jezrich, and that was Christophe Laporte. In 1 minute from now, we will hear Chris Hedge's response, but I need a moment of your time before we get back to this conversation. We are in our winter 2012 fund drive. I'm only going to take 1 minute here to appeal to you for your support. So far, we have raised $325 in this hour. We have a goal of $5,000, and we are over halfway through the hour. Again, I think today's conversation is an important one. So there are no DVDs, there are no documentaries, there are no books. I'm just asking you to pledge for the content. Again, there's a lot more to this conversation to come. I'm asking you to pledge whatever you can afford. If you can pledge $25, you'll become a basic member of your community radio station. If you could pledge $50 or $100, $200, or even $1,000, think of it as pledging for people who perhaps can't afford to give as much as you can right now. The number is 1-800-439-5732. 1-800-439-5732. Now, one of those people who was able to pledge generously was Patrick at $300, but it's in a form of a challenge. If we could raise $300 in the next 5 minutes, Patrick will throw $300 in, and that will mean $600 towards our goal. If not, we'll have to offer Patrick his money back. The number one last time, 1-800-439-5732. 1-800-439-5732. Now back to regular programming. I want Chris Hedges to be able to respond to your question, which again was coming back to an article that he wrote about Greek protests. Chris?
The point of that article, and I think Christophe nailed it, was that I kept asking, you know, what's happening to the Greeks is happening to us, and where are we? Why aren't we responding? It was not an embrace of Greek tactics. You know, anybody who's followed my long writing knows that I am fervently nonviolent. And there was rioting, and Christophe is right. There were tactics that were employed by the Greeks that are not tactics that I would endorse. However, you know, the point of the article is they're alive. They've woken up, and we need to wake up. I don't think that we can say that radical movements are always militant in terms of the kinds of tactics that they use. Martin Luther King, in my eyes, was a radical and fervently embraced nonviolence. So I don't think that nonviolence excludes the possibility of radicalism. And that is where I come out of. I think that at this moment in time, and that can change. I've been in extremely repressive dictatorships and military states as a foreign correspondent. But in this moment of time, nonviolence is the most effective weapon. And as I write in the story, in some ways, nonviolent movements actually seek police brutality. One of the reasons King kept going back to Birmingham is that the director of public security, Bull Connor, was a thug who constantly overreacted against peaceful demonstrators. You know, the issue of militancy is another discussion, one that perhaps I won't be as categorical about in terms of my condemnation of Blacklock. But I think that it is possible to build radical movements that don't employ confrontational tactics with the police, and I think the civil rights movement is a good example of that.
Christophe, tell me about what you think then, and when you talk about the strategy of the militancy of Occupy Oakland, is there a goal behind it?
Well, in the sense of demands and articulated goals, I don't think that anyone in the Occupy movement is at that point yet. I think that's actually our strength. I think that our role is to be inclusive. Our role is to, or I'm sorry, not our role, but our goal right now is to bring everybody in. And our goal is to be inclusive. And in that sense, it's important to think strategically about tactics and how people view those tactics and whether those tactics are going to appeal to a base. And, you know, we say 99%, you want, you know, tactics that appeal to people.
And some people are saying that the tactics are not appealing.
Of course they're saying that. But, you know, there's what people say, and then there's a reality. You know, every social movement that has ever happened has had militants, and it has had street fights. It has had violence. You know, you go back and look at the labor movement, which is completely legalized today and mainstreamed. But you go back 100 years, and the newspapers are writing about shots being exchanged between picketers and cops. And they write it about it as if it's nothing, as if it's, you know, second nature. All of the militants of past social movements gets recuperated and kind of wiped away from history, and then people don't pay attention to it because, you know, the social movement ran its course and was, and to some degree, made gains. And I think, you know, I think our Occupy movement, it is a radical social movement that does distinguish it. And that has been, it's, you know, when Chris says you can build a social movement that employs nonviolent tactics, this is a refrain we hear a lot from people who are arguing that Occupy should commit itself exclusively to a nonviolent strategy. We haven't had the strategic discussion yet to even make a determination. So that's, it's fair for those people to be raising their voices. But what I would say is that when you say we should do that, you have to do more than say it's possible. Of course it's possible. It's possible for us to commit ourselves to any number of things. But we also have to look at what's actually going on in the street and what's working and what's bringing people into this movement and what's making people excited about this movement. And for every person that's responding to the media, and they do, they respond to what the media says, because if they're not out in the streets, they don't know what happened. And what they read in the media is definitely not an account of what happened. And people know, and they're trained in our society to regurgitate what they get from the media, the opinions they get from the media. So, of course, you know, you ask someone who wasn't out there in the streets what happened on January 28th, and they tell you, oh, it was awful. Occupy Oakland was an embarrassment. They made a big mistake strategically. They turned a lot of people off to the movement. But then you go and you talk to the 400 people who were arrested, and they are committed to this movement. Some of them have been radicalized. Some of them have had their eyes opened in ways that, you know, they, and I don't want to suggest at all that the goal of any movement should be to get people arrested so they get radicalized. That's ridiculous and not true. And in fact, you know, Occupy Oakland and the people apparently who were, you know, the people whoever was in that march was not trying to get arrested. People ran through the YMCA to try not to get arrested. But the point is that, you know, for the people who were in the streets that day, the experience looked a little bit different. And, you know, they may have been frustrated by not taking the building. They may have been frustrated and scared. I was out there. I was frustrated and scared by the tear gas, by the attacks, police trying not to get arrested. But they come out the other end, and they're excited about the movement. And you go to the other occupiers, and people are writing solidarity statements. And the day after we got attacked, there were solidarity marches at about 20 occupiers across the nation. And so there's not this monolithic response to, you know, anything that happens in a social movement has repercussions, and they're not monolithic. And we certainly, the most important thing is not to assume that the media narrative that's being created around, and this is generally a mainstream media narrative, I should say, since I'm on KPFA, which has been very supportive of social movements. The mainstream media narrative is generally to alienate people from the movement, to suggest that the movement is either dominated by or has a strategic consensus that's utterly unacceptable to them. And so every news media report that you read about Occupy Oakland or about the Occupy movement at this point is basically saying that it's lost its way, that it no longer represents the people. That's not true for the people that are participating. That's for certain. None of those people are any less committed as a result of what happened to them in the streets. And if anything, they're more committed. And so you know, you have to take these narratives with a grain of salt.
Again, you are listening to Letters and Politics, and that was Christoph Laporte in conversation with Chris Hedges. We're going to get right back in just 1 minute to this conversation, but again, I need a moment of your time for a fundraising update. So far, we have raised $1,500 this hour. We do have a goal of $5,000. We are in our winter 2012 fund drive, and I'm just going to take this 1 minute to appeal to you for your support. So I think today's conversation, again, is an important one. So there's no DVDs, no documentaries, no books. There's a lot more of this conversation still to come. So I'm asking you today to pledge as generously as you can. We did have a challenge of $300 from Patrick. We did make that. We did make that challenge of $300 from Patrick. We now have a challenge from Michelle, who's putting up $500, saying that if we could raise $500 in the next 5 minutes, then she's going to throw in $500. If we're unable to raise that $500, we'll have to offer Michelle her money back. The number, 1-800-439-5732. 1-800-439-5732. Not preempting large portion of today's show with long pitches because we know the value of these airwaves during these important times. I hope that you will see the value in that. No bells, no whistles. You know what we do here, and you know we do it without advertising or underwriting. You know we're listener supported, and you know that listener support means you calling the phone room right now. 1-800-439-5732. 1-800-439-5732. Back to our conversation. Chris Hedges, and this will be my last question to you, so if you want to have a final word as well, go ahead and incorporate into the response to my question to you, and then Christoph, I'll give you the final word after that. But Chris Hedges, Christoph makes an interesting point. When we talk about the civil rights movement of the 1950s and 1960s, there were also other things that were happening at the same time that were militant. One thing I think of is the Black Panthers who went into the state capitol in California bearing guns. So it's an interesting point that while you did have the civil rights movement and the movement that was led by Martin Luther King, you also had more militant stands by people like Malcolm X.
Well, and King used them. You know, he would say to the white liberals who were getting scared of Huey Newton and Malcolm, if you don't work with me, you're going to end up with them. It became a kind of lever that King used to his advantage. But let's be clear. I mean, the power structure feared King. It didn't fear Malcolm. And, you know, of course, as repression mounts, there will be different forms of resistance, different expressions of resistance. That always happens in times of social upheaval and revolution. But I think OWS, whether it likes it or not, is a mainstream movement, and it doesn't want to alienate the mainstream. Not wise, in my view, for OWS to embrace the militant tactic of a direct confrontation with the police at this point. That's not a wise move. And I think that, you know, I'm not on the ground in Oakland, and I'm not going to make judgments. I mean, Christoph is there, others are there. I wasn't at that demonstration, and so, you know, that's their call. But I think for OWS itself at this point, it's, you know, the state wants to turn it into a movement that frightens people. And let's be clear, I mean, these are traditional liberals. Many of them are very timid. This was a balancing act that King had to deal with. I mean, and his frustration with white liberals, you know, could often descend into real repugnance towards white liberals. But in the end, you know, if we're going to build an effective movement, we can't shut those people off because they have been discarded by the corporate state and abused by the corporate state, and OWS has the capacity to express the alienation and frustration and anger that is sweeping across the country. So, I mean, you know, this begins to be a much longer discussion about what tactically works and what doesn't. I guess finally just want to make it clear that, you know, I was specifically zeroing in on Black Bloc, which I see as a disruptive force to the movement. And is being very effectively used. And I mean, I have no evidence, but I mean, if we go back and look at what happened in the 60s, and actually if we go back and look at what the RCMP did in Toronto during the G20, those were the movements that were infiltrated, and they were really effectively manipulated and used by people who want to destroy us.
Again, that's the voice of Chris Hedges. You are listening to Letters in Politics. I'm Mitch Cheserich. In just 1 second, we're going to get to the response of Christophe Lepore. You are listening to Letters in Politics. I'm Mitch Cheserich. A quick fundraising update. Last time I talked to you, I let you know that we had a $500 challenge from Michelle in Oakland. So far, we have raised $400 towards that $500 challenge. We have just 1 minute remaining until that challenge closes. If we're unable to raise that $100 in the next minute, we'll have to offer Michelle her money back. So far, we've raised $1,900 this hour. We have a goal of $5,000, and we have 10 minutes left in the hour, and we're going back to this conversation. Again, I think this conversation was important today, so I'm not bringing you a DVD. I'm not bringing you a documentary. I'm not bringing you a book. No bells, no whistles, just more of this conversation to come. I'm asking you to donate as generously as you can. The number is 1-800-439-5732. 1-800-439-5732. You know what we do without around here. You know we do it without advertising or underwriting, without corporate control. You know we're listener supported. The only way we're able to do this type of programming is through your support. I'm asking you to step up and do your part today. The number, one last time, 1-800-439-5732. 1-800-439-5732. We now go to the final statement by Christophe Lepore. And Christophe, I've heard other people speculate about police infiltration and Occupy Oakland. With that, and also let me give you the opportunity to have the last word.
I think it would be naive to assume that the police are not trying to infiltrate Occupy Oakland. I do think that it's also naive to suggest that you know, the one black bloc that we did have, that the 100 or so people who showed up dressed in black were all cops, or that the police somehow found a need to also dress in black to inspire those 100 people to attack the property they did. I think it was pretty clear that those people showed up to do what they did, and they didn't need any kind of police encouragement to do it. So, you know, the argument that the black bloc is rife with infiltrators, I think, is silly. It's a tactic. It's very deliberate. It's very organized. And when it shows up, you know it's there. You're not going to have a question, was it a black bloc or not? And, you know, it's not going to need any kind of encouragement to do the things that it does, because that just happens. But my final thought is that the strength of the Occupy movement has been that it's different. It started out very much looking like a standard liberal protest and falling very much into a paradigm that looked like the anti-globalization movement, where, you know, everyone converges on one place. And New York City, Occupy Wall Street, which is why Occupy Wall Street is so big. Everyone from the country was supposed to go there, like in summit hopping. And then in Occupy Wall Street, they were supposed to come up with one demand, and then they were supposed to present that demand to the decision makers, and in this very liberal concept of protest, they would meet that demand, capitalism would be reformed, everyone would go home, and yeah, you know, life would go on and everything would be better. But Occupy diverged from that very liberal model and quickly became a very radical social movement, and in the ways in which it has been different have been its strength, and the ways in which it has not looked like everything else and every other appeal that has been made to the 99% to join, you know, the anti-war movement, the anti-globalization movement, every activist group, every NGO, every service project. The ways in which we have not done that have been our strength and have been our appeal. And militants and radicalism are inseparable, and that is an appeal. And I don't think we can lose that. I don't think we can afford to stop differentiating ourselves on that strategic and tactical level. And I think the Occupy movement is recognizing this. It's recognizing that you know, we had this big bump in popularity because there was something new, and once that novelty wears off, people start to wonder, why am I a part of this? The movement is looking at Oakland, and the reason it's looking at Oakland is because the tactics there are Oakland is thinking big. It's thinking spectacular, and it's doing the kinds of actions that the rest of the country dreams about. And so when I will totally agree with Chris, I think the liberal sector of this, you know, liberal middle class in the United States is absolutely important. The 99% slogan targets them very directly and invites them into this movement. But we need to be careful in assuming that they will only go for what they've been given so far, because what they've been given so far has not brought them in. And so we've seen over and over people trying to bring the liberal class, this sort of quiet, sedentary block of middle class America, into social movements by offering them the same sort of generic, you come out, you hold your sign, you yell at politicians, you ask them to take your opinions into account, and then when you're big enough, politicians come by and ask you to vote for them. People have been asked that over and over in this country. It doesn't motivate people. Those strategies have failed, and so I'm more scared for Occupy, as Chris pointed out, I'm more scared of these attempts to co-opt the movement, to drag it into the electoral sphere, to create dummy organizations that act as political action committees and proxies for the Democratic Party than I am of sporadic militants, of the 10 people that might throw rocks at the cops, of a few windows that get broken in Oakland. Because overall, actually, when you look back at January 28th, in comparison with the Black Bloc that actually happened, there was no private property attacked on January 28th. People went into City Hall and they were angry. But on 28th, in the streets, nobody broke a single window, as far as I know.
Christophe Lepore is an organizer with Occupy Oakland. Conversation with Chris Hedges about tactics at the Occupy movement. And you're listening to Letters in Politics. I'm Mitch Jezrich. My friends, I have 4 minutes left in the hour. So far, we have raised $2,600. We have a goal of $5,000 this hour. We did make our last challenge by Michelle, who challenged us to make $500. I have a new challenge, $1,000. If I can raise $1,000, Nancy in Los Angeles, Michael in Sonoma, and an anonymous donor in Vallejo is going to throw in another $1,000, but they want to see that first there is enough support out there for programming like this to make that happen. The number is 1-800-439-5732. 1-800-439-5732. Again, yesterday we came up $2,000 short of our goal. Today we're taking a major chance, but I felt like this was a conversation that was important to have, and talking to a lot of people beforehand. A lot of people have different opinions and views on it. Some people didn't even want me to do it. I respect it. They think that some of the views were not valid. I respect their opinions as well, but the amount of people I saw talking about this, I felt like it was important that we did our part in talking about it on the air. I feel like that's the importance of this radio station. 1-800-439-5732. 1-800-439-5732. So far, we've raised $2,600, $1,000 on the line right now. If we could raise that $1,000 in our final 2.5 minutes, we'll be able to double our money. If not, we'll have to offer the money back. Now, I mean, $1,600. If that happens, so be it. I think, again, what was important was to be able to have this discussion. I think it's on a lot of people's minds. If you appreciate that that's what we're trying to do today, I would love to see you give us a call right now. Support this radio station. 1-800-439-5732. 1-800-439-5732. $1,000 on the line. 2.5 minutes to make it. Only two people calling in right now. 1-800-439-5732. 1-800-439-5732. We want a place where you can hear ideas and debates, a place where accuracy matters. We have a foundation that's based on human rights, civil rights, and economic rights, but we don't have to be selective with facts and skew the information to get there. I don't believe that is what you want. I don't believe you just want one view coming at you at all the time. There's a whole spectrum of views out there that I think we want to entertain. 1-800-439-5732. 1-800-439-5732. 2.5 minutes to go. We've raised $200 towards this $1,000 pledge. It's not looking good, folks. 1-800-439-5732. 1-800-439-5732. The number we have to wrestle with every day is this: 1 in 8. For every one person who gives to this radio station, there are another 7 listening who do not. And I know that if we could change those odds, this drive would be over. If we could get it to 1 in 5, we'd be calling off our next drive. If we could get every single person who listens in to pitch just $50, we wouldn't have to have a fund drive again all year long. So if you're one of those 7 out of 8 who are holding out, I'm asking you to step up right now. Give us a call. 1 minute to go. $500 towards the challenge. I'm asking you to step up and call 1-800-439-5732. 1-800-439-5732. And competing for your attention, broadcasters are bombarding people with loud noises and graphics. They change the effects every 3 or 4 minutes in the subject matter. It's spiraling downward and oversimplifying the world we live in and complex issues we grapple with. This is what we are trying to fight back against. We are now $600. We need 4 more people to pledge $100 to get this $1,000 pledge. We might have to offer the money back if we do not make it. 1-800-439-5732. 1-800-439-5732. We have yet to get the thumbs up from the phone room. You continue calling in. We'll use the next couple of minutes to continue taking calls. Please give us a call.